Phoenix Books presents The Age of Innocence, written by Edith Wharton. This performance by Joanne Woodward is copyright 2014 Phoenix Books and is digitally remastered from the original 1993 Dove audio sound recording.
On a January evening of the early 70s, Christine Nilsson was singing in Faust at the Academy of Music in New York. When Newland Archer opened the door at the back of the club box, the curtain had just gone up on the garden scene. There was no reason why the young man should not have come earlier, for he had dined with his mother and sister. But New York was a metropolis, and perfectly aware that in metropolises it was not the thing to arrive early at the opera. And what was or was not the thing played a part as important in Newland Archer's New York as the inscrutable totem terrors that had ruled the destinies of his forefathers thousands of years ago. The second reason for his delay was a personal one. He had dawdled because he was at heart a dilettante, and thinking over a pleasure to come often gave him a subtler satisfaction than its realization. Newland Archer, leaning against the wall at the back of the club box, turned his eyes from the stage and scanned the opposite side of the house. Directly facing him was the box of old Mrs. Manson Mingott, whose monstrous obesity had long since made it impossible for her to attend the opera, but who was always represented on fashionable nights by some of the younger members of the family. On this occasion, the front of the box was filled by her daughter-in-law, Mrs. Lovell Mingott, and her niece, Mrs. Welland, and slightly withdrawn behind these brocaded matrons sat a young girl in white, with eyes fixed on the stage lovers. As Madame Nilsson's "Mama!" thrilled out above the silent house, a warm pink mounted to the girl's cheek. She dropped her eyes to the bouquet of lilies of the valley on her knee, and Newland Archer saw her white-gloved fingertips touch the flowers softly. He drew a breath of satisfied vanity, and his eyes returned to the stage. Madame Nilsson, in white cashmere slashed with pale blue satin and large yellow braids disposed on each side of her muslin chemisette, listened with downcast eyes to Monsieur Capoul's impassioned wooing and affected a guileless incomprehension of his designs. "The darling," thought Archer, his glance flitting back to the young girl with the lilies of the valley. "She doesn't even guess what it's all about." And he contemplated her absorbed young face with a thrill of possessorship in which pride in his own masculine initiation was mingled with a tender reverence for her abysmal purity. "We'll read Faust together by the Italian lakes," he thought, somewhat hazily confusing the scene of his projected honeymoon with the masterpieces of literature which it would be his manly privilege to reveal to his bride. It was only that afternoon that May Welland had let him guess that she cared, New York's consecrated phrase of maiden avowal. And already his imagination, leaping ahead of the engagement ring, the betrothal kiss, and the march from Lohengrin, pictured her at his side in some scene of old European witchery. He did not in the least wish the future Mrs. Newland Archer to be a simpleton. He meant her, thanks to his enlightening companionship, to develop a social tact and readiness of wit, enabling her to hold her own with the most popular married women of the younger set, in which it was the recognized custom to attract masculine homage while playfully discouraging it. If he had probed to the bottom of his vanity, as he sometimes nearly did, he would have found there a wish that his wife should be as worldly wise and as eager to please as the married lady whose charms had held his fancy through two mildly agitated years. "Well, upon my soul," exclaimed Lawrence Leverts, turning his opera glass away from the stage. Leverts was, on the whole, the foremost authority on form in New York. One had only to look at him, from the slant of his bald forehead and the curve